Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio. As we say a big hello around the world to our listeners in New Zealand, Ireland, England, and all across North America. We have a fantastic show planned tonight. One of our favorite guests is going to join us from Padre Island, Texas, Captain Billy Sandifer, Field and Stream's Heroes of Conservation Award. He's one of the top nominees. And it's always a great hour when Captain Billy has a chance to join us. We are experiencing still spring-like weather here in Indiana. It's been quite wonderful, 72 degrees. They said we're going to get a little cooler weather tomorrow in the 50s with lots of rain. But I have to say it's been a wonderful winter and even a better spring. As always, handling the technical responsibilities, our studio producer, Melissa Hovey, and our technical engineer, Wayne Larson. Music done by Scott Carney. And from the massive, and we do mean massive, Wild World News Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, the honorable, distinguished, and always here, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson. I haven't asked about my niece for the last few shows. How is Elizabeth doing?
Elizabeth, the olive baboon, is, she's maturing. You know when the kids talk about the monkey's big red butt? It's actually becoming, it's materializing right in front of me. So the little girl's grown up a little bit.
Yeah, I haven't seen her in a while.
Well, she's quite special. Today she was actually helping my wife Cheryl guard the, she was pulling weed, that's what I'm trying to say. I couldn't spit it out. And that's quite funny to watch a baboon pull weeds. It observes and then does the task as if it's done it its entire life. And it's one of those moments, if you know what I'm trying to say.
Well, please send her my best.
I certainly will. The following portion of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by Alphabet Swamp, the new children's book by Cheryl and Larry Batson, or your autographed copy today at www.larrytheanimalguy.com. Or send check or money order to WES 4140 North, 600 West, Greencastle, Indiana, 46135. Shipping and handling is included.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News for April 19th. Well, we're going to start tonight with the amphibian news, heading off to Round Rock, Texas.
Oh.
A University of Texas biologist found a long-lost spring that was one of the first known homes of a rare species of salamander. Now, David Hills has been searching for the springs for a long time until he got a call from some residents of the Tenanqua Springs neighborhood who were trying to block the construction of a proposed gas station because the residents have reported seeing salamanders in the spring that run through their yards there.
Hmm. Well, maybe later Captain Billy Sandifer will have some insight on that. He probably knows all about it.
Well, you know, I've had the same thing happen to me here. I have found some large salamanders in my yard that aren't indigenous to Indiana.
You're kidding.
And nobody's planning on building a gas station nearby, but, you know.
You have your own preserve there.
I have my own little thing going on out back.
You do?
Well, we've got some new discoveries in the U.S. territory, Puerto Rico.
Oh.
Now, U.S. scientists using sonar and submersibles to map a reef off of the northeastern coast have found all kinds of interesting things. Hammerhead sharks. And an underground canyon that suddenly plunges 900 feet.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. They found the enormous orange and brown barrel sponges. It's just that we're going to have a lot of new discoveries coming in, and we'll keep our listeners posted.
Please do.
Well, let's see what the flatheads are doing in Ronan, Montana. Now, listen to this. This is a great idea. The Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes have purchased 125 trash cans designed to thwart bears looking for an easy meal on the Flathead Indian Reservation. Now, the tribes are giving the containers to homeowners who've had problems with bears getting into their trash. Now, the 95-gallon cans cost $300 each and were bought with a tribal wildlife incentive grant from those wonderful people at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Well, good for them. Hmm.
Yeah, and as we've been reporting, there have, you know, we've had a lot of bear stories in the Wild World News.
Yes, we have.
Few months.
Yes.
Now, here's someone who's been entertaining the public just a little bit longer than you.
Oh.
Portland, Oregon. The first elephant born in the Western Hemisphere in the latter half of the 20th century celebrated its 50th birthday Saturday. The Asian elephant named Packy was born April 14, 1962 at the Oregon Zoo, which was then called the Portland Zoological Gardens.
Well, that's pretty cool.
So, yeah, got a few years on you, but...
Yeah, it's about a decade.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we've got some hungry snails in Mobile, Alabama.
Uh-oh.
Now, you're familiar with the Amazonian apple snails, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Well, they were first discovered in Langan Park in 2008. They're in Mobile. Now, Dave Armstrong, a biologist with the State Division of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, said the snails are entrenched in Langan Park despite multiple applications of copper sulfite to kill them. Yeah, now that sounds pretty serious, but the snails have been shown to eat 95% of the vegetation in the aquatic systems there.
It seems like those snails are also found in the Everglades.
Yes, I believe they are. They're finding them down there now, and they're enormous.
Yeah, and they've been down there for some time.
All right, here's some sad news for our listeners in Ohio.
Uh-oh.
Melissa, Wayne, Cleveland, Ohio, Tim, a male tortoise believed to be at least 100 years old, has died at the Metro Park Zoo.
Oh.
Now, the Aldabra tortoise weighed about 400 pounds, and his shell measured 43 inches.
Wow.
And he was brought to the zoo in 1955 from Eastern Africa.
From where?
Eastern Africa.
Wow, it got there. Because they're from the Galapagos Islands.
Yep.
It took a long way to get there to the Metro Park Zoo.
Yep, many years.
But
that was a sad note. Now, now here is some macabre news, and it's from God's country.
Uh-oh.
Now, cows aren't wild animals, but I felt like we needed to do this story.
Yes.
It may take explosives to dislodge a group of cows that wandered into an old ranger cabin at 11,000 feet in the Rocky Mountains, where they then died and froze solid.
Oh, God.
The carcasses were discovered by two Air Force Academy cadets who were snowshoers, and they found them in late March. Now, the rangers believe the animals sought shelter during a snowstorm and couldn't get out.
Yeah.
Now, the cabin is in Conundrum Springs, Hot Springs.
Yes.
Show you with that, yeah. About 9 miles from the Aspen area.
Yeah, that's going to be a mess.
Yeah. That's a story in itself. Now, that we could call this one the cows that jumped over the moon.
Yeah. Well, I feel for the people that have to deal with that once the thaw begins.
Oh my gosh. No kidding.
Lord.
Yeah. What a strange story.
Yeah.
All right. Now, the old Farmer's Almanac says the next 2 weeks are going to be the best for fishing.
Oh.
And that appears to be true in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Now, big isn't always better. A Torrington teen is now in the Wyoming State Fish Record Book. Now, Colton Bastilios, 14,
what
caught
was his
a stone
name again?
Cat. And a stone cat is just a small catfish.
What was his name again?
Bastilios.
Oh, okay.
Colton Bastilios, 14.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, he caught this stone cat last month in the North Platte River. Now, the catch was only 10.1 inches long and weighed only 0.35 pounds.
Well.
Now, the Torrington game warden, John Steffens, said that it was the first entry in Wyoming for that species, which makes it a new state record.
Well, good for Wyoming.
See, you never know. All right. Well, what's the fact of the day? Well, the smallest turtle, the speckled padloper, is only 4 inches long. That's from head to tail. Now, the largest is the leatherback sea turtle that can reach up to 10 foot in length.
Yeah.
Now, Captain Billy, what is the largest fish in the ocean?
Whale shark.
That's right. Now, the whale shark is the largest fish in the ocean, and it can be over 50 foot long and weigh 2 tons.
Were you
more
testing
than that.
Captain Billy?
I was testing.
No, it's more than that. It's more like 20 tons.
Oh, my Lord.
That is a big fish.
Just so happened I was sitting here fiddling this afternoon, and they had a deal on whale sharks off of Africa, and it was given all the information. It said you got to 3 foot long and weighed up to 20 tons.
Oh, my God.
That's
yeah, I'll have to talk to my staff about that one.
Yes.
Well, that's
yeah, well, they probably need to talk.
April 19th.
A big thank you to Dr. Henry Day, also Captain Billy Sandifer, who corrected Dr. Day, and we have to get on his staff.
We well, that's always why I asked him.
That's right. And we always appreciate the efforts that Dr. Day puts forward each week with the Wild World News. We want to invite everyone to check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and our brand new Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends, filled with photos and information about our animal family. Oh, I hear my wolves outside howling. Also, RadioMom.fm and the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, 70% on vacations, restaurants, and a variety of other goods and services. And why not listen to my show, The 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7, at RadioMom.fm. Also, McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado. It's on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. We call it God's Country. Go to their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. Also, Tire Service Plus. In fact, I just saw Tire Service Plus this week. And owner Jerry Jones taking care of America's auto maintenance needs. They keep our animal truck on the road thousands of miles with our wild animal ambassadors. We trust them. Give them a call, 317-243-0700. Those are a few of our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
We would be warm below the storm in our little hideaway beneath the waves, resting our heads on the seabed in an octopus's garden near a cave.
Little Octopus's Garden, John Paul, George, and Ringo to welcome our one of our favorite guests on the show from Padre Island, Texas, way down south, a good friend, Captain Billy Sandifer. Good evening, Captain.
How you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. The question is, how are you doing? We haven't heard
well, you're running me nuts, you know? Because you went to talking about deepest, darkest Africa and stuff, and then I got to realized I don't know where my GPS is. So I've been looking for my GPS half of the time the doctor was talking.
Oh, my.
And then he kicked me off on that, and I just happened to listen to that this afternoon about the whale shark.
Yeah.
But then, after I told him what they said, that's a croc, because that fish cannot weigh that much. That's 40,000 pounds. 20 tons is 40,000 pounds.
Yeah.
That's too much. Okay. I'm looking at the book.
Yes.
That's what we do. It says he grows to 40 feet, 12.2 meters, but he won't give me a
weight.
A weight, but it damn sure isn't 40,000 pounds.
Then Dr. Dave may have been correct.
Yeah, that's why. It's easy for me to stand amended. I don't think I'm really the one that stands amended. I figure that $2 outdoor show I was watching was.
That's right.
You know? And because they put those things together in 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah. And research.
Yeah, well, they get the guys that do the research are sitting out front next to the Dipsy dumpster with a wine bottle. And so that's the only reason they can stay in business. I want you to know that, ironically enough, tomorrow through Tuesday, Dr. Larry Niles of Conserve, New Jersey, who's been doing all the red knot research, is down here, and they're going to be shotgun netting migrating red knots for the next few days on the national seashore.
Well.
And I'm told that the red knot is fixing to make the list of endangered species.
Yes.
And so this population down here is apparently a distinct separate population from the ones that everyone is so familiar with in the Delmarva area.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I guess until I started turning in data to Audubon, nobody really thought about how many red knots we had coming through here. And so our local Audubon man, David Newstead, got a hold of Dr. Niles, and since then they've been tacking some of these things and getting some returns on them and hoping to get some more information here shortly. And because if this is a separate population, that separate population might have a completely different nesting grounds, and which would mean that they might not be in as bad of trouble as we think.
Oh. Well, tell our listeners a little bit about the bird.
Well, he looks like y'all to eat him. He's a real pretty. They call him a red knot because he turns bright cinnamon this time of year during breeding plumage on his breast. And that bird, in the course of his lifetime, flies the distance to the moon. He flies 16,000 miles a year from the Arctic, far Arctic Circle to Argentina and back.
My Lord.
And they depend tremendously. The majority of that population is the Delmarva population, and they depend upon the eggs of the horseshoe crab for fuel to make this migration.
Wow.
And some young student was doing his doctorate or whatever and discovered the horseshoe crab was in bad shape. They were overfished to hell and back, and they were taking a red knot with them. And so they passed some pretty stringent regulations up in there to preserve and protect the population of horseshoe crabs, which has helped the red knot, but he had already took a bad whack. And apparently it's not getting that much better. So we live and learn, huh?
Well, we do, you know. It's and you know, this ecosystem.
Take all them bears. You know, you got all that problem with them cows up there in that ranger's cabin.
Right.
Well, how about the fall? You sling a few of them bears in there, and that'll be the end of the cow problem.
Between the bears and the wolves and the...
Yeah, just sling the bears in there and lock the door. And I'm sure there'll be some fat bears, and the cabin will be spick and span when everybody's through, you know.
Well, that's
proper utilization of resources.
Right, just take the walls down.
That's a great idea.
Let Mother Nature
It beats the one they're going to come up with, I'll bet you that.
Well, they're talking about dynamite. I mean, what's that going to
be? Oh, yeah.
what a mess that's going to be.
Every time we get in a mess down here, some kind of a bind or something,
yeah.
I'll tell some of these younger guides, if they're with me, they'll go, "What are we going to do, Billy?" And I'll go, "Nothing. They'll find their bodies in the spring." And, of course, I just tell them for shock value, but it's delightful.
Okay.
You know, you're talking about that monkey with a red butt.
Yeah.
We had, in Vietnam, we had what they called a rock ape. And I never have known if it was a baboon or a orangutan. But it's about, maybe 50 pounds or so, long-armed. And they call them rock apes because don't ever mess up and throw a rock at one. Because you're going to find that he's been throwing rocks all his life, and he is a precision pitcher. And I was on an ambush patrol one night where we were run plumb off the side of a mountain by two rock apes. And I've always wondered if they were orangutan or
baboons.
We can do it. Yeah. But I don't know which one's in the Orient.
Well, it would be either a pigtail macaque or it could be.
Yeah, this is a big, you got to remember, this is a big monkey now.
Or I'm thinking, I'm not quite sure if gibbons are found in Vietnam, the gibbon ape. I'm not quite sure if they're found in Vietnam or not. But you know, we won't go into that into the conversation, but it could have been something else. Did you actually see them?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They on the full moon, they'd come down and pitch a hippie fit and attack the concertina wire. And, of course, we had cans and all that kind of stuff all over that razor, German razor concertina wire.
Uh-huh.
And they'd just get rolled up in a ball and they'd cut themselves half to death. And it was a hell of a hoot.
Wow.
And we never knew how they did it, if it was some psychotic ritual, kind of like drunks in a bar on the full moon or what,
uh-huh.
You know.
That's
but, yeah, and that's the only time I'd ever see them. And the name of the mountain was Monkey Mountain. That might have had a little something to do with it.
Hmm.
But we were at the foot of Monkey Mountain, but there were several smaller species of monkeys there. But this, I believe, was probably a 50-pound monkey, and his hands dug the ground. But he sure backlash you with a rock, I can tell you that.
They could have been, I just thought of this, proboscis monkeys. The one that had the big nose.
Like I say, I never saw one in daylight.
I remember one book I was reading by John McKinnon, In Search of the Red Ape in Borneo, and these huge troops of these monkeys would go overhead and to show their anger toward any intruders, they'd urinate on them. So he said when those monkey troops would go over them, it would be raining monkey urine. So that was, I thought.
Well, there used to be a go-go bar out here on Padre Island at an intersection, and it was at an intersection and it had two doors.
Yeah.
And there was a bunch of spider monkeys in a cage by one of those doors.└ And all the regulars never went in that door. They always went around and went to the other side. And the tourists would go to the monkey door.
Yeah.
Because the guys that worked there had a dry sense of humor, and they used to feed those monkeys lots of overripe bananas.
Yeah.
And you can imagine what those monkeys would sling up on the people trying to come in the bar. And so
yeah.
If you saw some guy come walking in screaming and trying to get it off of him and smelt like doo-doo, there's probably a reason for that. And this is a unique place, isn't it?
Yes, it is, absolutely.
First topless bar wedding in the world took place there. Dallas lawyer married blonde wearing a veil.
Yes.
It was on the front page of the paper. She was viewed from the rear only, and I was on a DMZ, and my grandmother thought it was so cute, she sent it to me. So I saw the clipping. I know that for a fact.
Yeah, well, you know, I had a friend who was in Vietnam. He said one of the things that you realize very quickly is that the water buffalo is your friend.
I'm listening.
Does that make sense to you?
But the water buffalo to me was the 200-gallon tank that we got our bathing and drinking water out of that was pulled behind a piece of equipment.
That's right.
The one that walked on.
That was the water buffalo, yep.
Oh, okay. He was talking
about. Now, the other water buffalo, the Vietnamese believed was his grandfather.
Yeah.
And he came back. They believed in reincarnation. They believe he came back and plowed the fields so that his son and future generations could live there.
Yeah.
That's what they believed.
Well, he said you could always hide behind one because you know you'd never get shot because they wouldn't shoot them.
Oh, yeah. Well, unfortunately, I called mortars in on 8 of them one night. And our battalion had to pay for them. I don't remember what it was, but it was iron beef cattle was in Texas. I know that.
Oh my Lord!
Well, we had us another big shell cleanup.
Yes.
We did it on its 17th annual. We're up to about 2.5 million million pounds now.
Wow.
We got 20 tons. We had 3 people showed up in the absolute most horrible, raining as hard as it can rain, 42 degrees, 30-mile-an-hour winds.
Lord.
Ain't nobody got a slicker suit but me.
God bless you.
Even though the instructions said, bring a slicker suit. And I compared them to the boys at the pass at Thermopylae, the 300 Athenians under Leonidas that just would not quit because they didn't quit. And we got 20 tons of trash and 7.5 miles. We had to move the cleanup forward because the feds have changed the speed limit to 15 miles an hour from March 1st to Labor Day. And at 15 miles an hour, it take us too long to get in and out of the working area to get any work done.
Yeah.
So we did it on the 25th of February and kind of put us in a bind with the weather. But in Texas, you expect to be in a bind with the weather. So.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, God bless you and all the people that were involved with that, man. That's incredible.
Well, I'm trying to hide. I'm trying to disappear into the sunset, and they're not being very cooperative.
No.
I wrote in a magazine that I wrote for that I was officially retired, and immediately the phone began to ring 26 hours a day. And although I've been starving for 21 years waiting for it to ring.
Yes.
And so I got this Friends of Padre that I started, this C3 group that backs and does the big shell cleanup. We started it 4 years ago because I know I'm not here forever and I wanted that cleanup to be carried out and carry on. And so we're training the next generation to do that, and they're already in place and just doing a jam-up job.
Wow.
And they're wonderful young marine biologists and stuff like this with not only the academic background, but a genuine love for the resource.
That's fantastic.
So that warms the cockles of an old man's heart.
Makes you feel pretty good something like that has taken off so well with this younger generation because, you know, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are so concerned that with these young people not going outdoors and their activities indoors that our future zoologists and biologists are in jeopardy, you know, finding enough young, talented people that want to pursue a career like that in the outdoors. So that's great news.
You know what I see, though?
What's that?
Down in this in this, we have a university right here that Texas A&M at Corpus Christi that turns out marine biologists, and what I see is they've damn near overeducated the field.
Really?
Yeah, and you've got marine biologists working at chemists at refineries and dumping dipsy dumpsters on fins and on the national seashore. We call a PhD is a post hole digger. And so, you know, what you got to ask yourself, Larry,
yeah,
is these kids all get these jobs, and God bless them, and certainly you know I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm.
But there, who do you go to work for? Because there's only so much research going on, you know.
Right.
And you go to work for the state, you go to work for the Fed, or you go into a teaching career, and you know, there's not just a overabundance of jobs for these people. And as I said, a lot of my board on this Friends of Fodry is young marine biologists. And I can assure you they're not making any more money than anybody else is.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's another side of it.
Well, you would know. You're right amongst them. I mean, guys.
Well, you know, I'm sitting here trying to come up with a replacement for me.
Oh,
because anyone that's done this as long as I've had and invested a lifetime in it,
yeah,
you want to feel good about turning around and walking off and feeling like it's in good hands. But I can't find anybody that's got any IQ that wants to starve to death and work like a dog all day. I don't know why that is. They don't want to live in a leaking trailer house and drive a 1990 Suburban all their lives.
I know what you're saying.
And so that's what worries me about the future of it. You know, if we're going to have these jobs, that's great. But these jobs have got to pay enough for kids, quality individuals, to want to do it, don't it?
Sure. Absolutely.
Or we got nothing, you know?
Yeah.
We decide who's going to have the sense and who doesn't by what we pay people.
Mm-hmm. They're running into that in the teaching profession, too, so, I mean.
Well, sure. Why wouldn't they?
Absolutely.
Why wouldn't they?
Yeah. Our guest tonight, Captain Billy Sandifer from Padre Island, Texas. We're going to take a short break, folks. What a great show. You're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We will be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website, and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everyone. This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We will be back with Captain Billy Sandifer from Padre Island, Texas, in just a few moments. We want to tell everyone that next week on the show, children's book author, and master nature photographer Tim Ostermeyer is coming back to the show. He's got a brand new book out about penguins, and we're going to be discussing that and his adventures in the Antarctic, and it should be a great show. We also remind everyone that you can become a friend of Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. You will receive email reminders each week of the show telling you about our guests, and we encourage you to tell your friends about our program. And all the shows from day one can be downloaded absolutely free of charge at Blog Talk Radio. Just simply Google Larry Batson with two T's, Wild World, and all the shows will come up on your computer screen. And you can have your choice of some of the fantastic guests, including tonight's guest, Captain Billy Sandifer. Also, a big thank you to iKids Fishing. iKidsFishing.com is the first kids fishing show in the USA, starring kids, teaching kids how to fish. 40 million fishermen spending $45 billion a year. The iKids Fishing Show is a key. For more info at We Want You Cottages in Chautauqua Lake in western New York, that website is www.wewentchu.com. It is one of America's finest fishing resorts. And we encourage you to become an individual underwriter. Go to my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and contact me. I'll tell you how easy it is to help support our program so we can continue to have these amazing guests that we have had on for the last 3 years on our show, and we encourage everyone to do that. Also, we want to remind everyone that this show is co-sponsored by the first annual Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo. That'll be happening May 6th at the Chautauqua Suites in Mayville, New York. Here's the number, 716-789-3383. This year's speakers from the Monster Quest show, Melissa Hovey, Steve Calls, Bigfoot researcher Billy Willard, and I'll be there as well. That'll be happening May 6th at the Taco Suite in Mayville, New York. And we encourage you to go to their website. Gosh, I wish I had that written down. BigfootExpo.com, I believe, is the website. Or if you just simply Google Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo, you'll get to that site, and we encourage everyone to do that. Those are a few of our underwriters that do make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight's guests, Billy Sandifer. And Captain, what's going on down there with you now? That's what we want to find out.
Well, I'm studying. I've been fishing so long that I kind of got behind on my birds and my flora and fauna, so mm-hmm. I've been spending some time. A lot of my customers have big ranches, which is brush country, the Monte, the Chaparral.
Mm-hmm.
And I spend a lot of time hid out down on a 6,000-acre ranch in the absolute middle of nowhere. I'm the only one on it.
Oh.
And talk to the birds and old Indians and the hoot owls and identify stuff and do a lot of walking and waiting on this springtime to get decent down here. It seems like that the equinox tides are being pretty tough on us. We haven't had a lot of fishing so far in the surf. Palomine told me it took him an hour to go 5 miles the other day, and I said, no, thank you. I think I'll just wait a little while.
Mm.
And we're having a pretty heavy influx of Sargassum as we get more every year. It seems as if time goes on. We have more episodes of red tide and more Sargassum than we ever have before. And actually, our quality fishing window gets smaller and smaller as time goes on. So I guess I planned it just about right.
What do you attribute that to? What do you think causes that?
I just make them all mad and say global warming right off the bat. You know, I'm retired. I don't care.
Right. That does make people angry, doesn't it?
It does. And you know what's so tragic? It's going to affect their lives. It's going to affect the lives of their children and their grandchildren. And I tell you how I sneak it by. Usually I won't say global warming. Just say climatic change.
Right.
Because people seem to be so much more receptive to that. And I bet any place you, any state you called from your radio station tonight, mm-hmm. they'd tell you the climate's messed up. It's not like it's always been. You know?
Yeah.
And I got tickled. There's a bird, which they get a few of them down here on the Rio Grande, called a snail kite.
Yeah.
But where it's really prevalent, I've never seen one, is in the Florida Everglades, and it eats that big snail you were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how come it got to be a snail kite. And it has a beak that is specifically designed to eat that snail. So I was just curious, does that mean we'll start seeing snail kites in these areas where we see these explosions of snails?
Oh, you probably will.
Yep. It's interesting, isn't it?
It is. I mean, we
predator and prey, brother. It's been that way since the beginning of time, predator and prey.
Yeah, we had the weirdest winter. I mean, I don't go by.
We didn't have one.
We didn't either. I mean,
we didn't have any winter. We've already had 94 degrees.
Well, we haven't had
our water temperature is 79.1 right now.
Wow. Well, it's been warm here. I mean, it's been above average temperatures, and I think for the entire winter we only saw, gosh, maybe 2-3 inches of snow. And last year we were buried. But I don't like to go by just a single season because, you know, the life of this planet, that's not even a blink of the eye.
You know, as a hunter-gatherer, what I have noticed, because I'm a lifelong hunter-gatherer, creatures in the outdoors, in the wild, they anticipate the seasons just like we do.
Uh-huh.
And they're set up for those seasons to happen, just like we are. And when a season doesn't transpire on schedule as they expect it, it throws their world all out of whack.
It does.
It does. And
well,
I go, how in the heck can a fishing guide know where to fish when the fish don't know where to go?
Yeah.
Because they don't know where to go. There'll be someplace they ain't no more got no business than nothing.
Well,
because it's everything's off. Down here, we're running about 45 days early. And I'm afraid that that means we're going to have a hellishly hot summer. Because, it's already been 94, and we've been running about 13 degrees above average for the last 2 months. And those things, you're going to see, we're seeing more species of things moving right now than we've ever seen, and probably that's going to continue all of my and your life and for a long time. There's more and more things coming up from the south as our climate warms, and some of those things are good, and some of them darn sure aren't. You got it, Toyota.
Yeah. We'd made a joke about it. Dr. Davis talking about how the insects are going to be population is going to be very high this summer. I said it's going to be like Indonesia around here because
right.
we didn't have any winter. But you know what? I'm wondering what's going on here. Is usually by April the 15th, the ruby-throated hummingbirds have arrived, and I've yet to hear one whirring through the skies.
That's because they're only at my house.
Are they at your house?
Yes, sir, at my house. They're sucking every sugar feeder I got dry if they can keep a woodpecker off of it long enough. I can bundle you up a whole bunch of them and send them. Today, sitting here in this chair I'm in right now,
yeah.
I saw American chat, black and white warblers, summer tanagers, female and male rose-breasted grosbeaks, Baltimore orioles, indigo buntings, Nashville warblers. Yesterday was our first neotropical fallout of the year. And what that means is those birds are coming across the Gulf, going north in North America to nest, and we got 2.6 inches of hard rain.
Wow.
And they were out over the open Gulf, and, buddy, they went and found themselves a bush to sit on.
Yeah.
And so they'll rest here for a couple of days before the next ones, before they'll move on. We have another northern here Thursday. Same thing is going to happen again. And it will be a big one because usually about the 22nd of April is the peak of the neotropical migration here.
Hmm.
And see, you know, Texas was in a tremendous drought all last year.
I remember
that. And you're talking about all those insects.
Oh, yeah.
All of the swallows and stuff and everything in Texas really had a tough time last year. And it's my understanding that a lot of them did not successfully nest because they couldn't find insects.
Wow.
You know, if you got a drought, you don't have any overabundance of insects.
No.
I'm just like you. I can go out there and find plenty of them dive bombers with that nail on the end of their bill that take all mosquitoes. So there's going to be plenty this year. But last year, that hurt. And so when you get populations that are kind of tottering and then the climate throws a couple of years at them like that, it can have a serious impact on them.
Well, I'm concerned. We had wood frogs mating and laying eggs like a month ago, which is 6 weeks too early. I mean, so I'm wondering what the heck's going to go on this summer. It's going to be bizarre.
You're going to have a lot of snakes eating them frogs.
Well, I did see my first snake yesterday for the year.
Hey, I was over at a guy's house day before yesterday, and he shows me a 42-inch stuffed coral snake that he has in an aquarium. And it is he has papers on it. It is world record largest coral snake ever found. The only problem is it was killed one house down from me. I mean, give me a break. Give me a break. It was killed one house down from me. The city coop, when they were digging the culvert through there, killed it.
Yeah.
So
does that concern you, Captain?
Coral snake concerns me.
Yeah.
You know, that's the most dangerous snake in the United States.
Most poisonous.
And,
yeah.
And I got tickled. I was down the beach one day, and I actually had a radio that worked in the suburban, and I was listening to Valley radio station, and this guy was, this disc jockey was going on, and he said, Juan Ruiz, an undocumented Mexican male, was filling up a milk jug with water out of a bar ditch in McAllen and was bit on the hand by a coral snake.
Mm-hmm.
Juan immediately bit the snake's head off and used it, tied it as a tourniquet around his forearm and walked to the hospital. Juan is doing fine. The snake, however, did not survive.
Yeah, well.
Huh? You know what? I ain't messing with Juan. He gets a free rein on my block.
Well, that's quite
I'd
a story.
I'd have a heart attack if a coral snake bit me. It wouldn't have to have any venom in it.
Well, you know, they have very small fangs, so they have to kind of
chew.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have to chew. Trust me, I'm well-versed on snakes.
I mean, there was one snake I'd worry about in your neck of the woods. Of course, they are Western Diamondback rattlesnakes.
Yeah. Well, see, a lot of people are a lot more worried about cottonmouths than they are Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
Apparently, that poison can really be insidious with the cottonmouths. In that 21 months up there in Vietnam, they had about five kind of cobras that we run into just regularly. And I had enough snakes to do anybody for several lifetimes.
I'll bet.
And they named their snakes, didn't have a name. They were steps. One step, two step, no step, three steps. And that was how many steps you took from the time it bit you till you died.
I always wonder. Go ahead.
No, that's it. Go.
Yeah. No, I always wondered if a lot of that wasn't from the enemy trying to psych out the soldiers, you know, not only worrying about fighting this war, but also what you might run into in the jungle.
I wish. And it was a favorite. There was this little green-eyed son of a gun. It was a two-step.
Yeah.
And or this little emerald green, snow white on a belly, and blood red eyes, like jewels. And they would tie him with a little piece of string by the tail, and he was only a foot and a half long and very slender.
Yeah.
And they would stick him in the overhead of a tunnel. And then when a tunnel rat would stick his head in there to investigate that tunnel, he'd just go limp. They'd pull him out dead.
Wow.
Yeah, and his name was, if I remember right, it's a K-R-A-T-T. But,
great.
But they just call him by name. They were for real.
Yeah.
We should be so lucky. And I hope we don't start getting any. There's a whole bunch of South American snakes I don't want to be around. I'm done my jungle snakes.
Yeah, well, there's some darn dangerous ones for sure. Well, just think of all those sugarcane workers down there in Honduras, and where they've got the fer-de-lance, which is about a 9-foot poisonous snake, and when they have young, they have live-bearing snake, and they may have anywhere from 50 to 90 babies.
Better thee than me, Julio. I've seen that fer-de-lance, and they got a bushmaster or something.
Yeah.
I just really don't need them, you know. Like I say, I've done my snakes. I run into them on the island. I got a deal. I don't kill them anymore. Unless I'm up here in town, I kill one.
Yeah.
But if I'm out in the brush, I don't even kill rattlesnakes. Because, and most of the ranchers have quit it.
Oh,
because
really?
The rattlesnakes are rodent feeder.
Yes, they are.
So, do you want a lot of rats or not? It's
no,
that
we
simple.
Don't.
And nobody wants a lot of rats, and rats carry a lot of diseases.
Sure they do.
And so if you kill off your rattlesnake population, that is the big snake in Texas that kills rats. And so all at once you have a overwhelming amount of rats, and people have matured enough and been open-minded enough to realize that.
Well, that's
plus
great.
The fact, well, it's not only that. These little communities have all got to where they have rattlesnake roundups now, you know.
Yeah.
And they got the same old tired bunch of boys from Oklahoma, I think, and the same 10 rattlesnakes they haul around the world and catch them every day. But it's good for the local economy, you know. And so I've heard of ranchers, even when they clear land, they'll typically pile the brush, and then later on they'll burn the piles. And I know some ranchers have quit burning the piles, so that the rattlesnakes will have a place to stay.
Well, God love them. You know, that's my thing, Captain. I love snakes. I've worked with a lot of different types of snakes and over the years, and you know, and I always hated those roundups because it's just so exploitive. And in the past, people didn't realize what they were doing.
Yeah,
they were.
Well, you know, I figured that Creator knew what he's doing when he put all this stuff here.
Oh, sure.
And it's not really up to us to decide what meets our approval to stay and doesn't.
Yeah.
Except fire ants. Except fire ants. I don't know what that's all about. I ain't going there. I put up with black widows, rattlesnakes, king cobras. I've seen all of them. But them fire ants can kiss off, boy. I torch them anytime I get the chance.
Oh,
and feel good about it.
Yeah, they're insidious, I mean. gosh.
And, you know, they talk about, down in this country, they've had some issues with the quail problems. Well, the amount of drought's one of the reasons for that. But they claim the fire ants are really horrible on the quail, the baby quail.
I'll bet.
And the other ground nesting birds.
Yeah.
And I hadn't figured anything to do, unless they bite some guy you don't like or something, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's okay then.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But yeah. That's not usually the case.
You know, I've always thought that, too. Why did the good Lord put the fire ant here? All I can remember, they weren't fire ants, but as a youngster, I sat on a red ant hill in Colorado Springs. And I'll never forget those next few hours after that.
Well, we had red ants here, and I used to get a hammer, and I would attack their position. And then, of course, as closer as I got to that hole, the wider the frontage of them coming at me, charging me was. And before it was over, they were going to envelop me and fire me up, Bubba. But I was 10 years old, and I had a hammer, and it was my job. And that and yellow jacket's nest. There wasn't a yellow jacket's nest anywhere around. It was safe. But there's some things that are just meant to be. You know, we're
yes.
supposed to go through them. And if they, I get so tickled, I get these thing. You know, I'm going to be 65 in June, and I get these emails from my buddies about, you know, imagine we managed to survive and we didn't have this kind of protection and that kind of protection. When I think of some of the crazy crap we did, it's a miracle any of us are here.
Isn't that the truth? I mean,
well, it is.
I tell people all the time, if I had worn a helmet when I wore my bicycle in my neighborhood, I would have gotten beaten up. I mean,
Buddy, wait till you go get the six-pack of beer and the pretty cowgirl. And your buddy's got his, and you hop in the back, and two of you hop in the back of his truck, and you drive around a coastal Bermuda field at night until you come up on a bull, and then one of you jumps out of the truck and grabs onto the mane with both hands, and the other one runs out and twists his tail. Huh?
Well, how far would one have to be into that 12-pack to do that, Billy?
Well, I think it's more adrenaline.
Yeah.
I think it's more adrenaline than it was anything else, you know. And the VA said, you know, Billy, we thought about it, and you're insane. And I said, okay. I said, you know, I've been hearing that a long time. And they said, that's from Vietnam. And I said, I'm sure not going to disagree with you. But I was seeing little symptoms before then, you know.
Yeah.
And kids, farm kids especially, you know, we would buck off every calf or cow that anybody had let us ride.
Yeah.
Just kind of like Mohammed the Mountain, you know.
Absolutely.
And these kids now, they put a helmet on them to ride a bicycle.
Yeah.
What's up with that? You know, we'd have been riding it backwards with our feet up on the handlebars downhill.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I've lost count of times I went over the handlebars of my bicycle, and helmets never even came into the equation. I mean, I don't know how we survived. You know what I'm saying?
Well, God's got a sense of humor.
He does.
He does. He's got a sense of humor.
Oh.
And I always figured he wasn't through with me yet.
Oh, no. We aren't either, Captain, because, you know, you're retired, but you're not retired from being on our program, I hope.
Well, I'm about trying as hard as I can to carry the word about conservation. Because if we don't take care of it, it ain't going to be there for your kids and your grandkids.
Oh, so well said.
Amen.
So well said. Gosh, Captain, it's so great to hear your voice again. And I know our listeners around the world have always enjoyed the adventures and tribulations of Captain Billy Sandifer. What a show, Dr. Day.
Billy is always entertaining. We can always count on a five-star show.
Yes, it was tonight. Absolutely.
Every time I was ever locked up in a drunk tank, they all said that. But I didn't see any of them want to stay after 7 a.m. when they got ready to turn us loose. But 21 years since I've had a drink, and I'm still full of it.
Yeah, well, you know. Yeah, well, you've got a good soul and a good heart, and God bless Texas for the birthplace of Captain Billy Sandifer.
I appreciate you guys.
We appreciate you.
If we can ever do any good for you, holler.
Well, you never know, Captain. Dr. Day and I may come knocking on your door one day. And, of course, I know Melissa Hovey is quite the Shark fan, so she's probably upset we didn't get into Sharks tonight. But we will the next time, I promise you.
I just put a new $2,500 shark fishing rack on top of my truck for me to use now that I'm not fishing customers.
Yeah.
So we'll have to come put Melissa on it.
There we go. That'll work. We want to tell everyone that next week our guest is wildlife photographer, children's book author, Tim Ostermeyer will be with us. What a great show. We thank all of our listeners for tuning in, taking the time and joining our hour with us. And it was a great hour with Captain Billy Sandifer. Have a great week, everybody. You have been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Block Talk Radio. Good night.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.